ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहैः ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ Very good. Welcome to our webcast of our Saturday morning class on Shankara's Atma Bodha. We continue. In fact, we're coming to the end of a series of eight verses on Nididhyasana. Just to set the context, you'll remember that the main practice of Advaita Vedanta is Shravana, Manana, Nididhyasana. Shravana, literally hearing, but it means hearing these teachings and using them to guide you on a process of self-inquiry that culminates in a discovery of your true nature, Satchidananda, Atma, that is supported by the second, manana, a process of, literally it means thinking, but it refers to a process of removing doubts. Doubts born of improper logic are removed through proper logic and reasoning. That's the process of manana. And most of our text is dealing with shravana and manana. But now we're concluding a series of eight verses talking about Nididhyasana. Nididhyasana, as you remember, is a we translate it as contemplation, Vedantic contemplation. It's a process of reflection for the sake of assimilation. Assimilation means having these teachings penetrate all of our thinking, every moment of the day. These teachings should permeate all of our thinking, all of our activities, whatever we're doing. And for the sake of doing that, we have to very, very deeply immerse ourselves in this truth, the truth of your nature being Satchidananda Atma, unborn, unchanging, boundaryless, limitless consciousness. And we've discussed how that works in quite some depth. We have one more verse of instruction about how to perform Nididhyasana. It's quite a nice verse. I think you'll like it. We'll pick up the thread with this verse 38. Repeat after me. Atmanyevakhilam drishyam. Atmanyevakhilam drishyam. Pravilapya dhiya sudhihi. Pravilapya dhiya sudhihi. Bhavayerekam atmanam. Bhavayerekam atmanam. Nirmalakashavat sada. Nirmala Kashavatsada. Start in the second line. And Sudhihi, one with a good buddhi, a good mind, good intellect, referring to one who has gained this knowledge. We commented before that you can only contemplate on that which you know, which means necessarily contemplation, Nididhyasana, follows Shravana and Manana. In Shravana and Manana, you gain this knowledge, jnanam, bodha, atma bodha, self-knowledge is gained through Shravana, doubts are removed through Manana, then you are sudhihi, you are knowledgeable in the sense that you've discovered your true nature, your intellect. Is literally, sudhihi literally means one who has a good mind. But here you get the idea, one who has gained this knowledge, what does that person do? Dhiya, with that intellect, with that mind, which has already undergone the disciplines of Shravana and Manana, using that mind, dhiya, with that mind, with that intellect, pravilapya, having dissolved, we're talking about the process of contemplation. We're talking about that creation of that few moments of silence. We've talked about this in several classes now, that before contemplation can take place, you have to create a suitable situation for that contemplation. That suitable situation is at least a few moments of perfect silence in your mind. You don't have to be a great meditator who can be immersed in samadhi for hours. A few moments is enough. So pravilapya, having dissolved what? In the first line, akilam drishyam. You have to break the words apart. Atmani eva akilam drishyam. Akilam, the entire drishyam, all that is seen, all that is experienced. Akilam drishyam, all that is experienced, and all that's experienced is what takes place in your mind, and what takes place in your mind are sensations, perceptions of the world around you, as well as thoughts and emotions. So when sensations, thoughts, and emotions, akilam drishyam, all of those experiences, pravilapya, when they have been dissolved into what? Atmani eva. Atmani, into one's true self. Atma, into consciousness. Remembering that thoughts, I think we've discussed this, I hope so. Like a pot is a form of clay, thoughts are forms of consciousness. A pot is superimposed on clay to give rise to this object. In the same way, thoughts are impressed upon, superimposed upon consciousness to give rise to our experiences, experiences of cognitions, experiences of emotions, and experiences of what we see, hear, taste, touch, and smell. So you can imagine this pot giving up its form, maybe being crushed into dust, and add some water, and the pot returns to clay, to its origin. So this pot could be dissolved, merged into clay by giving up its form, by giving up its distinctiveness. In the same way, your thoughts, emotions, and sensations can give up their particular forms, and they get resolved into their content. The content of the pot is clay. The content of your thoughts is consciousness. I'll say that again. Think about it. The content of your thoughts, emotions, and sensations is consciousness, just as the content of the pot is clay. So, pravilapya, having merged all of your thoughts, emotions, and sensations, having merged them, atmani eva, into yourself, into consciousness. And what are we describing? That moment of silence. In that moment of silence, brought about through the practice of dhyana, meditation. We're not talking about nididhyasana yet. Here is first the step of dhyana, which prepares you for nididhyasana. So pravilapya, resolving all of your thoughts, creating those few moments of silence, then comes the nididhyasana. And what is a nididhyasana? And remember, the nididhyasana takes place after the moments of silence. While your mind is silent, you can't do anything, obviously. So when the silence comes to an end, when your thoughts return, then what should you do? Third line, bhavayet. You should reflect. You should reflect on what? Ekam, one, atmanam, the true self. You should reflect upon. You should contemplate the ekam, one, atmanam, true self, consciousness, which was present in that moment of silence, recognizing your true nature for what it is. And we've had this discussion in the last several classes, and that is in that, just to summarize all that, in those few moments of silence, you are present as yourself, unencumbered by thoughts, emotions, and sensations. Pardon the metaphor, it's like taking off your clothes and you are yourself, naked, without clothing. In the same way, in that moment of silence, you're naked in a manner of speaking, you are present as yourself without the covering of thoughts, emotions, and sensations, without these encumbrances. And in that moment of silence, you have an opportunity to confirm, to experientially confirm what you've understood through the teachings of Vedanta. We've discussed this at some length, so we'll leave it there. And in the last line, he gives a very specific kind of reflection for you to undertake during contemplation. So how, what kind of, after the moment of silence comes to an end, in what manner should you reflect? He says, you reflect on bhavayet, you should reflect upon, meditate upon, ekam atmanam, that one true self, consciousness, that's your true nature. In what manner? Nirmala akashavat sada. That which is sada, always, eternally, nirmala akashavat. Akasha, many of you know as space. Akashavat, like space. What kind of space? Nirmala, without impurity, without anything tainting it, without anything coloring it. It's interesting just to think about it. When you go outside during the day and you look up in the sky, you see color. Of course, some of you know it's due to the refraction of light from the sun as it hits the air molecules, that the refraction causes that appearance of blueness. So really speaking, that's not nirmala. Nirmala, free from impurity, free from color. What color is space? You've probably seen pictures of the astronauts floating around in space or on a space station, looking out through the window. And what do they see? They see that space is dark. Their stars are shining, but space is dark. Now, here's something to reflect on. The darkness of space reflects, I'm sorry, the contemplation here, the darkness of space represents the silence of your mind in those few moments. So get the metaphor. The darkness of space, nirmala akasha, space which is unaffected by anything, which means absolutely black space. That pure space appearing dark represents those moments of silence. Now, here's the trick. When those astronauts are outside, suppose they're taking a, they call it spacewalk. So they're outside of the of their capsule or outside of the space station. They have their spacesuits on. They're out there in the darkness of space, but the sun is shining. Look at this. The sun is shining, and yet space looks black. The blackness of space is full of light. I love this metaphor. The blackness of space is full of light, correct? So they're out there in their spacesuits floating around, but the sun is shining. In fact, the sun illumines them. The sun illumines their spacesuits. The sun illumines the space station. But when they look out in space, The space itself is black. Black space filled with light represents those moments of silence filled with consciousness. Perfect metaphor. Just as the blackness of space is full of light, in the same way those moments of silence are filled with consciousness, the consciousness as your true nature. Notice in the darkness of space, if there is something to be seen, so if the astronaut raises his hand, as soon as that hand is raised, it's illumined by the sun. If there's anything present in the darkness of space, that object reflects the light. In the absence of that object, there's only darkness. In the same way, when a thought arises in your mind, or an emotion or a sensation, that vritti, we call them, that vritti, thought, sensation, or emotion, reflects consciousness. Just like the astronaut's hand reflects light, in the same way, the vrittis in your mind reflect consciousness. And when the astronaut's hand goes away, there's only the darkness of space. In the same way, when your thoughts, emotions, and sensations resolve, pravilapya, there's only consciousness. That consciousness fills the silence of your mind. It's a wonderful metaphor. One more thing I was going to say. Actually, I think that's good. I do like this metaphor quite a bit. I've used it in other contexts. Oh yeah, last thing is just how is this bhavayate? How is this contemplation done? So you create the moment of silence. In that silence, some Western author used the term numinous silence. Numinous means having having knownness. It's not empty. The silence of your mind is not an empty silence. It's like a luminous silence. It's filled with consciousness. When the moment of silence comes to an end, then you reflect. What is your reflection? Just like the blackness of space is filled with light, in the same way, the silence of your mind is filled with consciousness, that consciousness being your true nature. Good. Very nice. I like that metaphor quite a bit. Then, with that verse, we have finished this section from verses 31 to 38 on Vedantic contemplation, Nididhyasana. The next section, the fruits of self-knowledge. In Sanskrit, we use the word pala. Pala means fruit. So this is jnana pala, the fruits of knowledge, of enlightenment. And to introduce this section, some of you know that in the Bhagavad Gita, in the second chapter, there, towards the end of the second chapter, there's a remarkable passage where Arjuna asks Sri Krishna, what is the nature of an enlightened person? Arjuna uses the term sthita prajna, one whose prajna, wisdom, is sthita, firm. And here, firm in the sense of being well assimilated. Before you practice Nididhyasana, your knowledge is not sthita, firm or well established, but after the performance of lots and lots of Nididhyasana, eventually your wisdom, prajna, becomes sthita, firm in the sense of well assimilated. So Arjuna says, for that sthita prajna, that enlightened one who's done a lot of Nididhyasana, Arjuna asks, ka bhasha, how does that person speak? Kim prabhasheta, kim asita, how does that person sit? Vrajeta kim, how does that person walk about? Arjuna, this is the typical question Arjuna has is the same question as many people have, and that is, how does an enlightened person behave? How do they look? Do they look and behave somehow different than others? You know the answer to this question already, and that is, they don't appear different than anyone else. On the other hand, what's going on in their minds is utterly different than those who are not enlightened. So the behavior and appearance of the enlightened person doesn't change, but the way they experience themselves and the way they experience the world around them is utterly changed. It's an internal transformation, not an external transformation. You know that already. So the next sequence of verses, starting with verse 39, describes the result of the internal transformation that takes place. The internal transformation that's the result of Shravana, Manana, and Nididhyasana. So let's get started with that.
Rupavarnadikam sarvam, rupavarnadikam sarvam, vihaya paramartavita, vihaya paramartavita, paripurnam.
Yeah, correct. There should be a break. There's something in the writing that purnam shouldn't be the dot, that bindu. Anyway, it's not a big deal.
Paripurnam chidananda, paripurnam chidananda, sarupenavatishtate, sarupenavatishtate.
There should be a break between paripurnam and chidananda to make the Sanskrit look correct. It doesn't make any difference. So, start in a second line. We are now talking about paramartha vit. Vit, the one who knows. Paramartha, the absolute reality. The one who knows his or her true nature to be Satchidananda Atma, and that Satchidananda Atma being non-different from Brahman, the conscious fabric of existence, that because of which everything exists. So that person, paramarthavit, the enlightened person, the one who's discovered this absolute reality. What about that person? Vihaya, having given up. So now we're talking about the transformation. What is the transformation? Nice way to begin. Because if you remember, we said that in the process of gaining enlightenment, you really don't gain anything. We had this discussion towards the beginning of the text. You don't gain anything. You already are Satchidananda Atma. To use the common language, your true nature is already divine, always has been, always will be. So it's not that you get anything, as we discussed long ago, it's that you get rid of something. Primarily, you get rid of ignorance, the confusion, the wrong thinking that causes suffering. But here, that's not quite what he says. Vihaya, having given up what? Rupa varnadikam sarvam, having given up sarvam, all this, all what? Rupa, form or color, varna, also can mean color, can also mean the caste, the jati into which you're born, adikam, etc. Having given up rupa, appearance, and varna. You can take it as the color of your skin, you can take it as a family you're born into. Rupa and varna are describing your physical body. In fact, sometimes rupa is used in a sense of beauty. You look into a mirror and you see something of great beauty. I don't see any beauty when I look in the mirror. Hopefully you do. Anyway, doesn't make any difference. Sorry. So, whatever you see in the mirror is not you. What you see in the mirror is your body. Your body has rupa, it has form, it has appearance, it has color. Your body has varna, also can mean color, also can mean the caste or ethnicity into which you're born, family into which you're born, genetics. All of these are attributes of your body. But the one looking out at the mirrors in front of you, the one looking out of these eyeballs, looking into that mirror, is completely separate from the body. The Paramarthavit, the enlightened person, is one who, vihaya, has given up any possible identification with the body, whatever it may be, no matter how beautiful or not so beautiful it is. Vihaya, having given up all that identification with the body, then what does that? What about that Paramarthavit, that enlightened person? In the last line, Surupena avatishtate, avatishtate. Nice translation is to abide. Literally, it means to stand. Sta is the root, to stand. Avatishtate, to stand, to remain, is a good translation. To abide. Why abide? Swarupena. To abide in your true nature. We just got done saying, you don't get anything. So the enlightened person doesn't get transformed into something. The enlightened person's transformation is in terms of getting rid of something, including this identification with the body. Once that identification with the body is removed, then avatishtate, the enlightened person remains or abides swarupena as his or her true self. You remain as your true nature, as yourself, as yourself in what nature? Paripurna chidananda. That is your swarupa. You remain as yourself, swarupena. And what is the self you remain as? The self you remain as is paripurna chit ananda. Your true self is ananda. And again, we said that you can't translate ananda here as an experience of bliss. We're talking about your true nature, which is not an experience. So ananda, better understood as fullness, completeness, perfection, wholeness, and chit, consciousness. So chit ananda, you remain as yourself, which is pure consciousness, full and complete. In fact, paripurna, purna, full, complete. Paripurna, I like that word. If purna means full, paripurna is more than that, completely full. And what do you mean by completely full? I was teaching children, and I told them to give the example. You can have a glass of water that is half full. You can have a glass of water that is all the way full. Suppose you have that glass of water that's all the way full, and you hold it under a tap that's open. So the water is coming from the tap, flowing into this already full glass and pouring out of that already full glass. That's the sense of paripurna, utterly complete, utterly full. So that paripurna chidananda, this utterly full and complete limitless consciousness, this is your swarupa, your true nature. And the enlightened person giving up identification with the body, vihaya, giving that up, that enlightened person, avatishtate, remains as oneself, abides swarupena in one's true nature. It's merely a matter of removing ignorance. There's nothing to be attained. You all, I've quoted my guru many times, you already are that which you want to become. Perfect. Perfectly said. Okay. These verses on the enlightened person, a little simpler. We'll try to go a little bit more quickly through these verses.
Nyatra jnana jnaya bhedaha. Nyatra jnana jnaya bhedaha. Pare natmani vidyate. Pare natmani vidyate. Chidananda rupatvad. Chidananda rupatvad. Dipyate swayameva tata. Dipyate swayameva tata. Jnatra jnana jnaya bhedaha.
It's a technical expression that's used frequently in Advaita Vedanta, talking about a bheda, a distinction among three things. What are those three things? Jnatra, knower, the conscious being. Jnanam, knowledge. And jnaya, that which is known. Knower, knowledge, and known. Jnatra, jnana, jnaya, knower, knowledge, and known. For example, right now, you, the one watching me, you are the jnatra, the conscious being. You are the jnatra, knower. Jnaya, that which is known, is me. And jnana is your experience of seeing me. Notice that there is this threefold bheda, difference or distinction. And this is Advaita Vedanta. Advaita means non-duality and means not two, means also not three, not four, not five. So right now, there's this experience of duality. Knower, knowledge, and known are present right now in this moment. But what about in that moment of silence in meditation? Do you find these three are present? In that moment of silence, are you present as the knower? In that moment of silence, do you feel like, oh, it's really silent? You don't have that feeling. You are not present as the knower. Is silence something known to you? Is silence jnaya, an object known to you? Logically speaking, silence is an absence. That which is absent can't be known to you. The elephant in my hand can't be known to you because it doesn't exist. It's the absence of something. The point here is, in that moment of silence, all of this duality comes to an end. So, and that's what he says here, that this bheda, these distinctions between knower, knowledge, and known, what about them? You have to break the words apart. Na atmani vidyate. Na vidyate. They do not exist. They are absent. Pare atmani. They are absent, atmani, in the true self. Pare atmani, in the absolute, pure, true self, which means in that moment of silence, when there is consciousness and only consciousness, in that silence, navidyate, all these distinctions are absent in that moment of silence. But what about now? Are you... You know, if you can see how you can misunderstand as badly and conclude you're only enlightened in that moment of silence, because it's only in that moment of silence that there's pure non-duality. As soon as that moment of silence goes away, duality comes back, and if duality comes back, your enlightenment goes away. Obviously, that's not the case. But you see the argument, an important argument. So the question is, when duality returns after that moment of silence, How does that really affect you? There's something subtle being taught here. Look at the next line. He gives you the reason why this distinction, bheda, between knower, knowledge, and known, this distinction is absent, navidyate, pare atmani, in your true self, whether your mind is enjoying a moment of silence or not, what difference does it make to consciousness? Atma. It's the mind that can have silence. It's the mind that has thoughts, emotions, and sensations. And none of that truly affects consciousness. Consciousness, the reason he gives here is Chirananda Eka Rupa Twat. Rupa Twat, because of this nature, because of the nature which is Chirananda, we just saw that expression, Chirananda Eka Rupa, the one nature. Because of the Eka Rupa, the one nature of everything being Chirananda. This is a little tricky. You get the sense of non-duality and silence. But there's non-duality even now. Right now, as you're watching me, as I'm talking, as I'm looking at objects, in this ordinary experience, there is non-duality. The duality of this experience does not negate the non-duality of what is. And that needs to be explained, of course. Here's the idea. Good, good. I got two pots. I need two pots right now. The multiplicity of pots doesn't negate the oneness of clay. We've been through this before. The multiplicity of pots doesn't negate the oneness of clay. In the same way, the multiplicity in your experience, the multiplicity of knower, knowledge, and known, right now, that multiplicity is present, that multiplicity in your experience doesn't negate the oneness of consciousness. This is wonderful teaching. Thousands of pots doesn't negate the oneness of clay. In the same way, the complexity and multiplicity of this experience, there's so many things going on in our experience right now, none of which negates the oneness of consciousness. Remember, everything you experience is the contents of your mind. The only thing you experience is the contents of the mind. And the contents of your mind are thoughts, emotions, and sensations, which are like pots, three different kinds of pots. And just as all pots are made of one clay, in the same way, all mental events that you experience, all vrittis, are nothing but consciousness. Chidananda ekarupa. They are nothing but that one consciousness. So the enlightened person recognizes this. And for that enlightened person, dipyate swayameva tat. Tat, that which is your true nature. Swayam, itself. That which is your true nature, swayam itself, it dipyate, shines, illumines, that consciousness which is eka rupa, one seamless consciousness, one undivided consciousness that's present in your experience right now. So in your experience, there seem to be divisions. Right now, one division is me out here. Another division is whatever is around you in a room you're sitting. Other divisions are your body, other thoughts, other emotions you might have. But all those divisions are like different pots made of one clay. Thousands of pots, one clay. Thousands of divisions in this experience, one undivided consciousness. And that Ek-Chid-Ananda, that limitless consciousness, Ekarupa, which is one and undivided, that consciousness, Swayameva, itself, Dipyate, it shines. Okay. Then. Evamatmaranau dhyana, matane satatam krite, udita vagatir jwala, sarvagnan jnanendhanam dahet, Wonderful metaphor. As I said at the introducing this text, this Atma Bodha is famous for these wonderful metaphors. Not every verse, but many verses. And here we have another verse. Let me introduce the metaphor and then we'll see the verse. In ancient times, when you're preparing to do a ritual and you need fire, if you don't already have your ritual fire going, you have to prepare the ritual fire. How do you do that? You have a stick on the bottom. You have a stick on the top. Both are called arani. There's a lower arani and an upper arani. Arani is a term for these sticks, special sticks that are used to create a sacrificial fire. And what do? That top stick, either between your hands or with a bow, you rotate that top stick, the top arani, while it's poking into the a groove in the lower arani, and through the friction, you create fire by means of the upper arani and the lower arani. This metaphor is used elsewhere in Upanishads. So that is the metaphor used here for what? Nicely, he says, evam, thus, atma aranao. In the atma aranao. Aranao means in the arani. Aran, and here referring to the lower piece of wood, the lower arani. The lower arani representing atma. So atma aranao, in the lower piece of wood, the lower arani, which represents atma, then what do you do? Dhyana matane satatam krite. Satatam krite, when this is done continually, satatam, always, krite, when it's done. When what is done continually? Dhyana matane. Matane means literally stirring, but here, turning. So dhyana matane, when the turning is done, the turning of the upper arani, the upper stick, and that upper stick represents what? Dhyana meditation. Don't take it too seriously. This is a metaphor, kind of a nice metaphor. So dhyana matane satatam krite, when there is the continual turning or churning, drilling, is my translation. That's a nice translation. When there is the constant, continual drilling through meditation into atma, the lower stick. So the upper stick represents meditation, the lower stick represents atma. And here we have to refine that term. Dhyana usually means meditation. But here in our very Vedantic context, the meditation we're doing is Atma Vichara, Vichara, inquiry into Atma, the true self. So that Atma Vichara is what is the drill, as it were, and it's being drilled into Atma. Again, don't take this too literally, because Atma is not a separate thing. This is an image, an image. So when that Atma Vichara, that meditation in the form of self-inquiry, when it is drilled vigorously and satatam continually into Atma, what is the result of that drilling? Well, what is the result of rubbing these sticks, or with the bow, you're turning that stick? The result is fire, jwala, flames. These flames represent what? Udita avagatihi. Avagatihi, knowledge, which is udita, arises. Just as jwala, flames, arise from the drilling of the wood, in the same way, through the intense practice of atma-vichara, self-inquiry, here called dhyana, through that intense practice of and constant practice of atma-vichara, what arises is the fire of knowledge. Atma udita avagatihi jwala, that flame, which is udita avagatihi, which is the arising of knowledge, that flame of knowledge, the fire of knowledge, fire of wisdom, arises, gets kindled. And the most interesting part about this is that flame, sarva ajnana indhanam dahet, with breaking the words apart, that flame, dahet, burns, consumes. Consumes what? Well, just as flames consume wood, here called indhana. Indhana is fuel, the wood that's being burnt. So that's interesting. When you start the fire, the wood that you're using to start the fire catches fire and gets consumed. This piece of wood, the upper arani that you're using to start the fire, it itself catches fire and gets consumed. And what's described here is the indhanam, here the metaphorically, that fuel, that wood, represents what? Sarva ajnana. Sarva, all. Ajnana, ignorance. All ignorance gets consumed by that fire of knowledge. And here you have to get the metaphor. Just as the instrument, that upper arani, the instrument through which you create the fire, that instrument gets consumed by the fire. This is a metaphor. The instrument, the upper arani that you use to create the fire, that very instrument gets consumed by the fire. In the same way, the instrument that you use to gain self-knowledge, what is the instrument? The instrument is the student of Vedanta. The instrument is the mumukshu, the one seeking liberation. The instrument is the seeker of wisdom. The instrument is the meditator, the one performing meditation. Just as the wood gets consumed by the fire, the meditator gets consumed by the fire of knowledge. The seeker gets consumed by the fire of knowledge. The student of Vedanta gets consumed by the fire of knowledge. Why? After the fire of knowledge takes place, you recognize you're not a student of Vedanta. You're not a seeker of wisdom. You're not a mumukshu who seeks liberation. You are a Satchitananda Atma, pure consciousness. All these other statuses are arbitrary. They're born of your mind. They're born of ignorance. Due to ignorance, pure consciousness becomes a seeker. Due to ignorance, pure consciousness becomes a student of Vedanta. Due to ignorance, pure consciousness becomes a mumukshu, someone seeking liberation. All of that is consumed in the fire of knowledge. You cease being a seeker or a mumukshu or a student of Vedanta once this knowledge takes place. It's all that ignorance is consumed. Just as the instrument of creating fire is consumed, in the same way, the one seeking knowledge gets consumed. The one seeking liberation, that individual limited self seeking liberation, gets consumed in the fire of knowledge. Good. One more nice metaphor. We'll just see that. It's quite simple, actually. Arune neva bodhena, arune neva bodhena, purvam santamase hrite, purvam santamase hrite, tatah avirbhavedatma, tatah avirbhavedatma, swayam evam shumaniva, swayam evam shumaniva. Simple, but subject to misinterpretation. Let's see this. The metaphor is of a rising sun, sunrise. Aruna, arunena iva. You're breaking the words apart. Arunena. Aruna is sunrise. Arunena iva. Just like by the sunrise, and the sunrise here is the rise of knowledge, arun, the bodhena, bodha, knowledge, atma bodha, self-knowledge, bodhena, due to knowledge, which is arunena iva, which is like the sunrise, due to knowledge, which is like the sunrise, tamase hrite, when tamas, darkness, is hrite, removed. By the way, there are several puns, Sanskrit puns going on here. Tamas can mean darkness. Tamas can also mean ignorance. So just as the sunrise removes darkness, in the same way, knowledge removes ignorance. So when knowledge, like the sunrise, when that knowledge removes the darkness of ignorance, purvam sun, this is another pun. Purvam can mean before. Purvam can also mean east. Look at this. So the sun rises in the east. Purvam sun. The sun rising in the east removes darkness. In the same way, the bodha, the knowledge which arises purvam, before, the knowledge which arises before destroys the ignorance. So this is like a pun going on. So just the knowledge that arises like the sun rising in the east, just as the sun rising in the east removes darkness, in the same way, the knowledge arising in your mind removes the darkness of ignorance. Tataha, and then, so step one, remove the ignorance. What is step two? Tataha, then, avirbhavet atma. Then, atma, avirbhavet, appears. This is where you can easily misunderstand, misinterpret this. When you remove the darkness, atma, avirbhavet, it appears. Swayam, itself. Atma itself appears. Let's just see the rest of the verse and then I'll explain the confusion. Atma appears. Eva, indeed, Amshuman Eva, just like the sun. When the sun removes the sun rising in the east removes darkness, then the sun appears. In the same way, when knowledge removes the darkness of ignorance, then Atma appears. Atma appears? You can see the problem with that statement. Atma is present even in a state of total ignorance. If you're ignorant, how do you know you're ignorant? Consciousness. You might remember a very important discussion we had long ago where we said that Atma is partially covered by ignorance. Remember that? I gave the example of the veil covering the lady. That veil, she can see through, and you can also see through a little bit and get the sense of her face. Even though she's wearing that veil partially obscures the lady. In the same way, ignorance is like that veil, partially obscures Atma. In what way? You know you are a conscious being, but you don't know the nature of that consciousness. You don't know that that consciousness is that so-called inner divinity. You don't know that the consciousness that you think is ordinary, that consciousness is extraordinary, that consciousness is unborn, uncreated, unchanging, that consciousness is boundaryless, limitless, vast, all-pervasive, that consciousness is one, the same consciousness revealing your thoughts, and which is the same consciousness revealing my thoughts. All of that gets obscured by the darkness of ignorance. So to properly interpret this, we have to remember that very important teaching, that when it says, tataha, thereafter, atma avirbhavet, atma appears, better just interpret it properly. Atma is unveiled in the sense that that veil which partially obscures a lady's face, that veil could be removed. In the same way, ignorance partially obscures your true nature, Satchidananda Atma. When that ignorance is removed, then your true self, Swayameva, shines forth in its true nature, Amshuman Eva, just like the sun just shines. A final comment here about the sunrise. We've given this metaphor several times, so it won't come as a surprise to you when I say the sun doesn't rise. Remember, the earth turns. But more than that, it means the sun is always shining. So right now, it's, you know, during the day, it's shining in the United States, but it's night in India. But night in India doesn't mean that the sun stopped shining. It's shining elsewhere. Wherever you are, if it's night, the sun continues to shine elsewhere. The sun never stops shining. And the reason I'm pointing this out is this term, tataha, thereafter, avirbhavet atma. Atma, avirbhavet, literally means becomes apparent, becomes manifest, becomes visible. But it's not like that which was invisible becomes visible, but rather the sun which was hidden behind a horizon, always shining, that always shining sun hidden behind the horizon becomes visible, always shining. But previously not seen, now after it rises, it's seen. In the same way, Atma is always present as Satchidananda Atma, but it's covered, partially covered by that veil of ignorance. When that veil of ignorance is removed, Atma is recognized in all its glory. That's the proper understanding of this. Okay, we have several more verses on this topic to see. We'll see more in our next class. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha, Sarve Santu Niramayaha, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchid Dukha Bhag Bhaveta, Asato Ma Sadgamaya, Tamaso Ma Jyotirgamaya, Mrityor Ma Amritangamaya. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Tat Sat.